Maybe it's too trappy. I don't know. Joel Radio's back. Welcome in, everybody. How you doing out there? Joel is here. That's me. I'm Joel. This is my podcast. Corey Hall's over there.
Shalom.
Gonna do some fun stuff today. We got a lot of things. I saw some movies. We saw a movie called Detroit. I saw a movie called Detroit. And since we live in Detroit, I thought we'd talk about it. How's that sound?
Okay.
Here's a thumbnail sketch of the review. Me talking about Detroit should be better than watching. I hope. And lots of stuff going on. Podcasting. What happened to that? We'll talk about that.
I remember podcasting.
I remember it when it was good. We were on it when it was good. And now they're I think they're fucking it up. But we'll talk about podcasts and how to get them and how to... What has happened? The glory days are over. The golden age is over, in a sense. But we'll talk about those things. What else we got going on? I saw a pretty cool HBO documentary. We'll talk about that. Rock and roll documentaries. I'm a sucker for those.
All right.
We'll talk about those. And whatever else comes up. I know we've got movie thoughts out to the audience. The audience is going to give us their thoughts on movies.
Yes, we'll get your feedback.
Comments. But I'm back from the Gathering of the Juggalos. Let's just start at the top there, because some people, they tune in. The Juggalos get a hold of this show every year, and they go, Upchuck's talking about the Gathering. That's my name over there.
Uh-oh.
And let's talk about
attention,
it. And
attention, Juggalo media.
We're going to talk about the media.
I have maintained my proud, unsullied record of not attending the Gathering for 15, 16 years now.
This is the one.
I'll sit this one out. I'll be over here.
You picked a good one to skip. And not that I hated the Gathering. It was fine for me. We went to Oklahoma City, which is... now, originally the plan
was... When's a good time to go to Oklahoma City?
Well, let me explain how we ended up in Oklahoma City. The plan was to go to Colorado. Because, you know, Colorado is a land of magical weed and freedom.
That's true.
Yeah, I have a theory on Colorado. I believe that Colorado is the new Florida. Here's what I mean by that.
It's where all of the garbage people drift to eventually.
Kind of
like blowing trash.
People that don't fit in anywhere just kind of end up in Florida. They kind of go, that's been the case over the years.
I was
right?
in Florida recently.
Yeah.
And never has there ever been a greater disparity between the natural beauty of the state.
Yeah.
And the ugliness of the environment. But, a beach, we were in Fort Lauderdale. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Boca Raton, Fort Lauderdale, Miami. Gorgeous. Incredible. White sand beaches for hundreds of miles. Drive 4 miles inland.
Yeah.
And it's a nightmare.
It's
an unholy
nightmare. So I like Florida too. I enjoy the weather. I enjoy some of the outdoor activities in Florida, but it's Florida. Damn it.
You like crocodiles on your golf courses.
It is not high culture. It is low culture. And there are rich parts of Florida. There's poor parts of Florida. I've been to both.
It's the lowest of culture. It's this weird thing where it's trashy and also not specific.
Well, it's also Southern, and it's like Midwestern and East Coast rejects. You know, that are sort of co-mingling and coexisting. And
everybody talks about the Latino element, but unless you're in kind of parts of Miami, it's not that prevalent.
Yeah.
Really. It's kind of...
There's
the Cuban population's kind of centered in Miami. Yeah.
So Colorado was a place that... The Juggalo Gathering seemed like an ideal place to go. And when I talk about, are Juggalos just trying to go... Well, the Colorado thing, being Colorado, New Florida, I know lots of guys who are like, hey, man, I'm moving to Colorado. This is it for me. And it's a lot of guys who, to put it bluntly, have sort of given up on Michigan or given up on wherever they live now. And maybe people will find what they're looking for in Colorado. And maybe... maybe California is that for some people, too. But in a way, I see California at least being... viable in terms of like job opportunities and things that, that maybe Colorado and Florida don't afford
you? Don't get me wrong.
Especially like people in show business.
Don't get me wrong. There are vast stretches of California that are, you know, the Inland Empire, the Valley, the great Inland Empire. It's a shit show.
It can
but
be, sure.
The heights of California are
right.
so great.
Yeah.
San Diego, San Francisco, Los Angeles
right.
are so... Their cultural milestone,
right. Well,
you know.
California, Florida feels like giving up, in a sense.
Yes.
And look, and that's why retirees go there.
Feels like,
you know, Florida
so
feels like giving up.
So what is Oklahoma for?
Well, and then I feel like Colorado is the new giving. I mean, isn't California, you're not giving up. You're still trying, in a way. New York, you're still trying. But yeah, Oklahoma City was just, you know, there was not a venue in Colorado that would host the gathering that was... You know, what I've, from talking to people, people say, well, you know, there's places that'll do it, but it becomes financially tough to do it there. Meaning, you know, we can't draw the numbers that would, you know, be able to cover the rent that people will want for the grounds, and so you end up somewhere yeah. else. So, Oklahoma City, there's a place called the Lost Lakes, which is a water park. Now, I know you think of, what's a water park here in the Midwest? Well, a water park is... A really nice, sunshiny, poured concrete place with lots of big water slides that cost millions of dollars. And the Lost Lakes was a place where it's kind of a dirt path with a big man-made lake and kind of hillbilly slides, I guess, is the best way to describe the Lost Lakes.
Hillbilly slides.
It looked like a good time to take your three kids for $8 a head and spend an afternoon. Lost Lakes in Oklahoma City was instead for the gathering 4 days of 100-degree weather and dust and locals who didn't like us. Now you go, well, the gathering, what locals would like that in their town? And the answer is places like where we were outside Columbus, Ohio, where they realize that there's really nothing all that bad going on there and the locals make lots of money. So they liked us. But we moved out of there. Don't ask me why.
Well, you went right to the Bible Belt.
Yes. Oklahoma City is a cow town. The way I would describe it is it's a big city with a big city economy, but small town Republican values. That does not add up to a welcoming place for the gathering of the Juggalos. And people lost their minds, and cops were all over the place, and there were all
kinds
of...
What you're trying to tell me is that the... You're trying to tell me that the psychotic murder clowns and their drug dealing posses were misunderstood in Oklahoma. That's what you're trying to
tell me. My point is that, look, if you don't want to have a music festival, I get it. And we're going to talk about that's the next thing I got here is, you know, police shutdown. You know, no, you know, girls can't get topless at the gathering. You can't smoke
what?
Pot publicly.
Is this America?
Well,
the hell is this?
Well, the thing is, the gathering in times past has been on private grounds where it's really just a guy's backyard.
Yeah.
And a guy like the guy in Cave and Rock, Illinois, the cops really couldn't come in unless there was like a 911 call that somebody needed help. But here, you know, the guy who owns the land has some kind of deal with the cops because he's putting on stuff like the Steve Miller Band next month, and he needs to be in their good graces. So the cops are driving around in their squad cars, and the crackdown is on. So here's the crime tally.
Let me just proportionally, what is the over under on amount of doobies smoked at the Steve Miller show versus the gathering?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay,
I'm building to that.
Doesn't seem like a big difference.
From
a pot consumption.
I'm building. Let me read you the crime docket from this gathering of the Juggalos. Let's call it 4,000 people at this one. Not, I think the biggest gathering was probably well over 10,000. So let's say it's down. But again, you go to Oklahoma City in 100 degrees, you're not going to get a huge turnout. And the lineup was, we'll get into the lineup in a second. But
what's the geographical breakdown? Isn't the fan base in the Midwest really?
Yeah, I mean it's from all over, but not a huge amount of Oklahoma Juggalos. Let's put it to you that way. But here's a news article from KOKH Fox 25 in Oklahoma City after the gathering. Again, 4,000 people, 3 days, actually 4 days. Their information is wrong here, okay? All right. Police say 8 people were arrested during the 3-day gathering of the Juggalos. Like I said, it was actually 4 days. And if you consider camping, it was really more like 5 or 6 days. Here's the first arrest. 28-year-old Michael Schnittigan was arrested on July 26th with several grams of marijuana, drug paraphernalia, and hundreds of dollars. He faces complaints of distribution of a controlled substance. Okay. Several complaints from nearby neighbors of an, quote, overwhelming number of fireworks, Corey. Fireworks! God forbid you have fireworks in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have that in every neighborhood in America in the month of July and August. 26-year-old Mark Burchell and 59-year-old Charles Beath were arrested for possession and illegal use of fireworks, and now we're up to three arrests. During one, this one's funny. Now, this is a typical Juggalo arrest, in my opinion. During one of the arrests, the subject led police back to his campsite to confiscate the rest of his fireworks. As the officer approached the campsite, he allegedly observed 25-year-old Jonathan Julian sitting on a chair with the CD case sitting on his lap. The officer noticed a hard plastic card, the man's wallet, and a straw on the man's lap. As the officer approached, Julian looked up and noticed him. Police reports show then Julian shoved the straw in his pocket and became very nervous. While searching Julian, the officer allegedly found a small plastic baggie containing a white substance. The substance later tested positive for cocaine. So, if you're leading cops, Juggalos, listen to Upchuck, your pal here, and anyone that wants to do cocaine. If you're going to do off illegal fireworks and you're leading the cops back, make sure the guys have put the coke away. So that's the dumbest arrest at the gathering, was this Jonathan Julian fella. Christopher Patrick Green was arrested on a complaint of disorderly conduct. Police reports show that Green was working for a vendor when he was fired for stealing. Green then allegedly slapped a coworker. So this is basically two merchants fighting.
Oh, okay.
There's more chaos at the gathering. The most dangerous band in the world.
So
I got more.
Were these guys selling pipes or?
I don't even know. They could have been selling. They could have been selling hot dogs. I don't fucking know. Yeah. By the way, all those things for sale. Yeah. Pipes, do-rags,
frisbees.
But, you know, there's guys who sell artwork at the gathering. You never know.
Yeah.
No, there's some good. There's
what kind of artwork?
There's a guy that works for us named Tom Wood that is a well-known. He does fantasy oil paintings. That's really great.
So
no,
like,
it's incredible stuff. So like he draws, like, you know.
Does he do conversion vans as well? Does he?
He could. He'd fucking make a great conversion van. Tom Wood's great. I love Tom Wood. You'd like Tom Wood. He's a good guy. But anyway, all right. Let me keep reading. Taylor Weir, 27, was arrested on a complaint of public drunkenness. So you got drunk in public.
Now hold on.
Yeah, how ridiculous is this
public
article?
Drunkenness at the gathering? The
hard
drunk.
To believe.
What have we come to in
I
this
know.
Country?
Juggalos, can you keep your publicness private? That would help Oklahoma City. Don't we understand what's happening here? Police state they made one arrest for possession of marijuana. There's another
Wait,
arrest.
Just one?
One arrest. One arrest. Now, well, they had the guy selling it, and then one guy was possessing it. Here's another one.
Now,
here's
in previous years, there was famously a drug bridge.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they shut that down. All right, here's another one. On July 29th, event security contacted police after seeing a man with no wristband on. A wristband is required for entry to the event. The 21-year-old man, Damian Henderson, told officers he was working for trash detail at the event. When they didn't recognize the name of the trash detail he claimed he worked for, he was arrested because he was not. So a guy snuck in, essentially, and didn't have a wristband. And then, when Henson was brought in, he had a plastic baggie containing marijuana in his pocket. The final arrest, Corey, the other great menace, the eight. The Chicago, the OKC 8,
okay.
If you want to talk about, you know, the menace to society that the gathering is. The final arrest came in conjunction with a traffic accident at the event after the driver was found to have a revoked license. So, mayhem, chaos at the gathering. Fireworks, fights among vendors, sneaking in without a wristband. That's what we got. That's what the Oklahoma City police cracked down on, Corey.
Well,
God forbid the menace of the Juggalos, another urban myth completely exposed. And then you go, because here's my thing. Any gathering of people, any group of people, music festival, you're going to have arrests. Did a Google News search. Here's what I got from the last approximately 10 days as far as Google News lets me search back. Chicago reports 27 arrested, 234 sent to hospitals during Lollapalooza. Suspected thief arrested with 60 phones at Lollapalooza,
now,
police say.
Okay, but What is the proportional difference between Lollapalooza? You said you had 4,000 people.
Yeah, okay. There might be 50,000 people.
So probably 50,000 people together.
There might be,
Jones,
but
right?
still.
Or at Lollapalooza.
But still, let me keep reading. I'm going to give you some more information here. Six arrested at Brantley Gilbert concert on July 31st at Darien Park Theme Park in New York. I have no idea who Brantley Gilbert is, but I'm guessing he's not a wicked clown, and that was a one-day event that had six arrests in New York. Here is the Bedford County Music Festival. Pennsylvania State Troopers made 36 arrests over a four-day festival in Mann Township, Pennsylvania. Four were arrested for DUI. They seized numerous drugs, including LSD, ecstasy, ketamine, mushrooms, prescription pills, cocaine, THC oil. Same festival, Maryland police arrested 25. So that would be a total. That would be a total of over 60 people in 4 days of this festival. Let's go to this next one. 107 arrests at the Hard Summer Music Festival. This is in DeVore, California, in San Bernardino County. 107 arrests. 62 arrests for drug and alcohol conditions. Here's more. Country Crossings Music Festival, Central Point, Oregon. This was on August 1st. 12 arrests on festival grounds there. So, again, worse than the gathering. And Corey Hall, would you believe in, I mean, I can't believe it, but in Amsterdam, 30 arrested at the Amsterdam Gay Pride Parade.
All right, but that's 100,000.
I understand
people.
That. But it's also shows.
So, wait, let's do some math.
You can do your math.
All right, statistically,
you do your math.
30 arrests.
Juggalos don't do no math.
Per one.
You do your
magnets, how do they work?
Juggalos don't do no math.
How do math work?
But here's the point.
All right, well, how many arrests were at the gathering?
Eight.
Out of 4,000.
Out of 4,000.
30 out of 100,000.
Okay, but...
So if we're talking statistics and proportionality,
but
that's a fairly high number for an event with 4,000.
But you could also say 8 out of 4,000 is statistically irrelevant. And 30 out of 100,000 is statistic. My point is that there is really
what
no...
What are you arrested for? By the way...
what are you... Exactly.
I have been to Amsterdam.
Yes.
Where... Prostitution is legal.
Yes.
Where they actively encourage British tourists to come down from Menden and Slough and Slough and whatever and puke all over the streets. What do you have to do to get arrested in Amsterdam?
Well, what do you have to do to get arrested at the goddamn gathering? So my point is that all of this is
bullshit. Hit a naked woman with a fish?
It's
I don't
all
know.
Bullshit. And I've done that. And it was wonderful when I did that. It's been a while. My point is that it's all just a bunch of hype. It's all just a bunch of nonsense. The gathering is weird and different, and that scares people. But at the end of the day, Dierks Bentley and goddamn Jimmy Buffett and all these guys, their fans are every bit as bad.
Were any of the musicians arrested for putting out that horrible shit music at the gathering? Did any of that happen? No? Okay.
Look,
I have never been a fan of the Juggalos.
Okay, but
as has been stated 100 times, and all the Juggalo media will call me a dickhead. But I am not.
Please send your comments to.
But I have
Corey
also
Hall.
I've also met
not Joel Fragamenti.
I've also met the big man. And
Violent J. You were in his home.
And the slightly less big man.
Yes,
I've met both.
Violent J is slim now.
Is he? Lost
he's still
weight?
Bigger than Shaggy.
Well, he'd have to lose a lot of weight to be slim. But
he's slim. He's pretty slim for him.
The man had a neck made of gravy. but.
All comments. Corey Hall.
There will never come a day if I lived another 1,000 years where I liked the Juggalos or the music or any of the scene. But is it any different than... No, you're right. It's not...
It's at the end of the day, it's just a concert.
Noxious than anything. I mean...
Let's have fun.
Look, this goes back to when, you know, in the 80s, there was a paranoia. There was what they call the satanic panic.
Yeah, over metal,
over Dungeons and Dragons and metal. And all of that turned out to be silly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you're completely right. It's not for me, but it's not exactly
do you want to go just start arresting people because you don't get it? And if you don't get it, you know, like I took an Uber at one point in Oklahoma City because I didn't have a car. I rode down. And by the way, fuck driving to Oklahoma City, by the way.
Yeah.
17 hours. Fuck all that fucking bullshit. Fuck Missouri, fuck Illinois, fuck driving through those places.
Southern Illinois is the single biggest shithole.
I've driven through Iowa. That's awful.
That's not great either, but I've been to every state. I'm still Nebraska. I'm still waiting to visit your wonderful cornfields.
Well, wait no more. Yeah. You should be wrapped this up early so you can get out there. I'll give you that. You can leave.
I think we're down to about four states.
Okay,
I've never
well,
been
good
to
for
four
you.
Or five.
Yeah.
But Southern Illinois leads the way in garbage.
Is completely dull. But yeah, so,
I would apologize to Florida.
Illinois also.
If Chicago left the state of Illinois, then we could just set fire to it.
And Illinois is like 65 mile an hour speed limit too, and it's like you motherfuckers. And they also do a thing. Now look, I'm going to sound like a dick here, but when you drive that long, and I drove of the 17 hours, I think I drove about 10 on the way down, and I drove 9 or 10 on the way back. So we had to split. We split the drive because it was exhausting, you know. They put this rumble strips right on the edge line. You know how there's the yellow line that tells you the edge? You drive through Michigan, you drive through maybe a state like Ohio, Missouri was like this. You get a good foot, 2 feet of grace before you drive on the rumble strips. Illinois puts the goddamn rumble strips right on the edge line, which means, you know, sometimes you drift, sometimes a car comes into your lane, you're passing, whatever you're doing. And, you know, guys are sleeping on this trip. And they're being woken up by, I know that seems like a stupid thing to complain about, but for God's sakes, Illinois, get your shit together. So driving through Illinois is completely annoying.
It's a nightmare.
Southern Missouri is a complete, like, they do that whole tourist trap Route 66 shit there, where there's a billboard for some caverns. I think it's called the Amazing Caverns or something. Yeah. There's a billboard every goddamn 10 feet for that. Mm-hmm. There's a billboard every 10 feet for the world's biggest candy store. There's a billboard every 10 feet for fucking the world's largest gift shop. It's like I-44. It's the old Route 66.
Well, there's,
and it's idiotic.
There's
and
a
it's
lot
completely
of
annoying.
There's a lot of Ozarks attractions and
is it the Ozarks?
Yeah, it is.
I guess it's the Ozarks.
That like Missouri into Arkansas is the Ozarks.
And then there's Branson.
What about Branson?
Branson is south of where I was.
Okay, so you didn't see the Branson sign?
Well, I saw signs for Branson, but it was like exit here and then you can go to Dolly Parton's restaurant or some shit. But I didn't do that. And then Oklahoma's got its.
I think we should make the road trip to Branson, though. I really have always wanted to go down there and really.
It's a fucking long way.
Go to the Ray Stevens Theater.
Yeah.
And,
you want to see Yakov Smirnoff?
Yeah, Yakov. I think, did Wayne Newton shut down his show in Branson?
I got to talk more about the gathering. One final thing. And then Oklahoma, you get into the, Buffalo Indian themed rest areas. So I went to one of those. With the Cigar Store Indian out front, the big wooden cutout.
Oh, okay.
I went to one of those. That was interesting. All right. And then, so I'm at the gathering, and one of the things that, I've gotten some press over the years and been photographed and been on things, and there was definitely less press this year, but there's a guy that comes every year who's a pretty well-known writer named Nathan Rabin. You familiar with his work?
I just bought his book.
Oh, which book did you buy?
My Year of Flops, which
It's about movies.
He had a column in the Onion AV Club that was about, the Peter Frampton, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club. The infamous flops.
So Nathan has been coming. I think Nathan's been coming for 5 years.
Right. And Nathan, he wrote a previous book.
Right, and I'll get into that, because Nathan wrote a book called You Don't Know Me, But You Don't Like Me, and that was, I think, some of his first reporting on The Gathering ended up in that book. He infiltrated Fish fans, or just kind of went to Fish shows, and then he went to Juggalo shows and went to The Gathering and wrote all about, The Gathering and that. And I didn't read that book. Nathan's also famous for coming up with
it, right?
Well, yeah, and I'll get to that. But Nathan, I think, is also famous for coming up with the some article where he talked about the manic pixie dream girl in film, and that he's the guy who coined that term. So he's known for that as well. But so Nathan's a well known writer, and he's been coming to The Gathering, and he in this book, You Don't Know Me, But You Don't Like Me, he talked about one of the shows, and it was something like Upchuck the Clown tells a joke that flopped, and Upchuck did this, and I don't remember what it is. I looked for it on Google Books, read the hunk that was about me, and it was pretty inaccurate based upon my recollection of that night. And, look, I'm fine to be criticized. I'm fine to be made fun of, but I do require a little bit of accuracy from those reporters, and I'm fine with that. Like the Bobcat story, which I won't go into here. Bobcat story is largely accurate. And it's funny, and have at it, Bobcat. I'm fine with that.
You've been turned into a bit by multiple comedians.
Oh, yeah, Joe DeRosa. And Joe DeRosa's story was largely true. And so, again, I don't have a problem with that. And people have written about me and written things. And, you know, I'm in the book Juggalo that Steve Miller wrote that came out last year. And he interviewed me several times. And, you know, it's about 5 pages about me in that book. And it's very accurate. And I like, you know. So Steve Miller did a good job with me. But Nathan and I have never really spoken. I know who he is. He sits there, watches the shows. He hangs out backstage. And we've been around each other, but we've never really spoken. So Nathan shows up, and let me just read what Nathan wrote, because Nathan has a blog called Nathan Rabin's Happy Place. I think it's at NathanRabin.com. You can read this and everything. But he talked about, well, this is one thing that we did at the gathering. Nathan, you know, we usually book name comics. You know, Charlie Murphy, who just died, was a guy I worked with there, and we've had...
So you booked the late Charlie
Cheech
Murphy
and Chong.
This
no,
year?
No, but I'm just giving examples of who we booked. You know, Bobcat I mentioned, and we've booked, you know, Ralphie May, and Bobcat Goldthwait, Gilbert Gottfried, famously, who was on the show when he was there, and, you know, a
That's
million
true.
Famous guys who've done The Gathering, Paulie Shore, Jimmy Walker, goes on and on. Well, this year, they went with, like, variety acts, I'm guessing for a cost-saving measure.
Okay.
So Nathan wrote this whole thing about the ventriloquist who headlined the first night. And, you know, the ventriloquist, again, you can read Nathan's article where he shits on the guy. I thought the guy was a good one of those, but it was still a ventriloquist. So, you know, I got no, you know, he did what he did.
Was it Willie Tyler of Willie Tyler and Lester?
No, it was just Lester. Lester is now...
Just Lester came...
Lester broke off.
On his own.
No, but it's...
But that's the kind of thing that they like to book at the gathering.
But you can find this guy, you know, whatever. Nathan writes all about it, and you should read it, because I think Nathan's criticisms are fair. They're not my criticisms. They're his. But he wrote about that, and then he talked about this and other things at the gathering, and then he gets... Towards the end of the article, he wrote a few paragraphs about me. So we'll get into it, and I'll quote him, and then I'll stop quoting him and give my own thoughts. But actually, I'll just read the whole thing. The evening was hosted by Upchuck the Clown, a fixture of ICP since I first started writing about them in this decade. I'd written about Upchuck as a sad sack, purposely tragic comic figure, but this year he had lost so much weight and looked so good that I didn't recognize him originally, at least out of his makeup and out of character. As he has.
You know, you were just described as a tragic comic figure.
I'm getting to more. Let me finish. Right. Let me finish, and then we'll discuss. As he has in years before, Upchuck gave me a hard time for the stuff I'd written about him in You Don't Know Me, But You Don't Like Me, before delineating that he was just giving me the business. It's a testament, again, to how invested I am in this world that I genuinely felt really proud of Upchuck for losing all that weight and being on the ball. I damn near teared up. This is the best one. You think he's kissing my ass now? Listen to this, Corey. More from Nathan. I damn near teared up when the 10-year-old boy, who, by all rights, should never be anywhere near the gathering, beamed with excitement when Upchuck autographed his program. It might not have meant anything to anyone else, but it was a real moment of recognition and validation for a dude who has been kicked around even more than most juggalos. And it's moments like these, tiny but tender and important in their own way, that keep me coming back despite the exhaustion and the heat and the travel and the cost and everything else. So Nathan was touched by my weight loss. He was touched by me being nice to a young fan and wrote lots of nice stuff about me. And yeah, I did when I saw him. I don't know what it was, but I completely went off on Nathan. I'm not going to lie. I said, you know, why don't you talk to me? You write all these articles, and they're inaccurate, and in your book, and I read your book, and Steve Miller talked to me about his book, and Steve Miller's book was great, and then your book was the, you know. So I kind of went off on him hard, and was I giving him the business? Sure.
But
I was being honest as well.
Can you not see the... Never mind.
Well, right. Whatever. But Nathan, that's Nathan. Those are Nathan's thoughts, and... That is accurate.
But this is something that's never, ever going to be appreciated by mainstream people.
Well, I mean...
By people who work at newspapers, by people with... this is like...
But wait a minute. Nathan works. He's a very well-known writer.
I know, but...
But I mean, he...
But the quest to have... This is a cult thing.
I understand.
And the quest for approval from outside sources
right.
for Juggalo-related activities is never going to happen.
But what does that have to do with anything?
I just, you've seen
like a guy
you,
wrote about me like and I'm want, reading it to the audience right, that is tuned right, in okay, to hear me.
It just seems like you want acknowledgement for something that people are never going to appreciate.
Well, wait a minute. I went and like signed an autograph for a fan.
Yeah, sure.
And am complimented for my weight loss, and that's being appreciated. So what is there anything else in this where I'm going, Upchuck is hoping that the world reaches out and accepts jugglers. That has nothing to do with
this. No, I think you just want critical approval for something that's never going to be critically
approved. I'm not wanting critical approval. I got critical approval, and I'm reporting on that on my show.
Well, you signed a kid's autograph, and that was nice.
Yeah. Okay. And a reporter noticed it, and I'm telling my audience that if you want to read more about it, go ahead and read it. But you're reading way too much into it.
Okay.
I mean, it's fine. You're going to continually shit on it, and you'll continually shit on it from not being there and not reporting on it. And you can
My opinion wouldn't change if I went.
Well, that means you're a poor reporter because you're not going to go and actually like write something based upon what you saw. You're going to write based upon what you think, and you can just write that from here, but nobody wants that writing because you don't go. So, I mean,
this
what difference
like,
does it make?
But this is like saying the Titanic sunk with dignity. It's
not a, but
it's that,
I
it's that
mean,
you're evaluating. My critical appraisal of the content of ICP's songs.
That has nothing to do with this.
And their act.
We know
and
that.
The whole shit
you know
will
that.
Never
change. You've been saying it for 10
if
years.
I go,
on this
if
show.
I go to the event.
But that's
and
nothing
people,
to do with this.
But you're setting such.
It has nothing to do with
but
this.
You're setting such miserably low expectations.
It has nothing to
for,
do with
for
what
event
I'm talking about.
And yourself.
Guy wrote about me and I'm sharing it with the audience.
All right,
let's move
congratulations.
On. We know that. I am being congratulated.
All right.
That's fine. I mean, a guy wrote about me, and it's a guy that I've had a contentious relationship, and I respect Nathan, and I've always liked his writing, aside from the stuff that's about me. And so I had a moment well, where I'm acknowledging
him. Did you reach out
to him
to interview him for the podcast?
You know, if Nathan was in Detroit, I'd certainly invite him, and I'll send him a link to this, and he can listen to this, and if he
well,
wants to come
in.
What if
he did a phoner?
We could do a phoner if we want. I don't know. I don't do a lot of phoners. Because
is he in
they
LA
don't sound
or Chicago?
Good. I don't know where he is. He might be in New York. I don't know where Nathan is. But anyway, so Nathan wrote that, so thank you, Nathan. It was nice, and it was honest, and
all, right.
and all that stuff, and, you know, whatever. All right.
He's a good writer.
We're
I like
done,
his,
we're
I like
done
his work.
With the gathering. All right. We're done with the gathering. And all right, let's move on. So we're talking about podcasts. I think I've teased that at the top here. Podcasts are getting, while podcasts have gotten more mainstream, and we started doing this show in 2005, so it's been 12 years. Of this.
It feels like 30.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, you do this show, and people now can get the show, and they know what it is. And, you know, we've worked hard to make podcasts something that, you know, people can know what they are. And a lot of people have told me, you know, that was the first podcast they ever listened to was this one. And some people just get into it and go, oh, I'm listening to yours now, and stuff like that. And that all feels good. But podcasting, I think because there are people that are making money in it, we're not two of them, people that are making money is now it's becoming like a lot of things in media, in mainstream media especially, where it's, you know, there is a balkanization. There is now a way people are now deciding to put stuff behind paywalls. It's basically getting harder to listen to podcasts
yeah.
without having to either cough up money, download multiple apps.
Well, when we started this
it's
project,
ridiculous. It's
it was
getting
hard,
to be goddamn ridiculous.
It was hard to listen to podcasts when we started because you needed an RSS feed.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of technical hurdles that yes. people didn't understand how to get the there was no such thing really as live streaming.
I mean, the first iPhone came out in 2005.
Yeah,
you know, to listen to a podcast, right. you really need to listen to it on a computer, or you'd burn it to a CD and put it in your car.
So we literally originally did the show to the length of a CD that you could burn.
Yes,
people would ask me, and I'd have to burn CDs yeah. for them to hear the
or
show.
Or if you owned an iPod, which was like $300, you could put it on that.
In fact, I remember once going up and doing a UP comedy run, and I didn't have an iPod.
Yeah.
And so I burnt a bunch of CDs of podcasts.
Yeah.
I downloaded a bunch of podcasts, not, you know, not just of other stuff that
yes.
was out.
And you're saying you didn't listen to us all the way to the UP.
No.
I'm
no.
shocked by that.
No. But I mean, I downloaded a bunch of Kevin Smith's and shows.
Okay, yeah,
and
yeah, of course.
All these, yeah. and like half of them didn't work because the file didn't go right.
Right, yeah.
And I just had to listen to.
Technical limitations.
I had to listen to like gospel radio in
yeah,
the UP.
Well, that's
and it was
brutal.
Like really brutal before I had satellite radio.
Yeah. So, you know, it's getting hard, and I, as a guy who listens to podcasts, and enjoy them, you know, I've found now, here, I'll just tell you what I'm doing to listen to podcasts, and I know I'm not, and people can say, well, you know, there's other ways of doing it, and whatever, look, I have an Android phone, I am now 100% podcast on the phone, and I was downloading them on my computer and transferring them to a SanDisk MP3 player for a long time. I did that, and that worked. That's a good thing to do. I mean, at the time, that was an easy way for me to do it. But phones have made it easier. I have an Android phone. I have a Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge, which has an expandable SD card slot. So I have lots of storage for these shows to download them and use them. You can also download stuff. I have a big old data plan that I pay for through Verizon, so I can download the shows live. If I'm on the road and I want to get one, it's not a problem for me. But the apps is becoming to be, it's getting to be a problem. So I was using Google Play Music, which I pay money for to stream unlimited music every month. It's kind of like Spotify. It's $8 because I'm grandfathered in. And I also get the YouTube Red, which means commercial-free YouTube, which is something I use at home as well on my big TV. Wake up, watch some YouTube content, which I enjoy.
I watch a shit ton of YouTube.
Yeah, it's good. YouTube's good now. But
I don't have YouTube Red, but I watch a shit ton of YouTube.
But you might even get some value out of YouTube Red, maybe.
Well, what is the value out of the YouTube Red?
Well, you get the streaming music as well.
Okay.
So you sign up for that, and you get YouTube Red, and you get all the streaming music you can handle. Because I know you had Spotify. Do you still have Spotify?
I do. I have Pandora.
The premium.
I drop Spotify.
Okay, but if you wanted the, you know, because all the stuff that's on Spotify, although they're going to that too. The music streaming services are starting to get exclusive and Tidal and Jay-Z and all that shit. But anyway, so I was using Google Play Music, and I was happy with that because almost all the shows were on there. Basically, everything I wanted on there, sans one, was on Google Play Music. So I was like, cool. All right, Google Play Music, got it. Then Gilbert Gottfried and his amazing Colossal podcast, which I know we both like, talking about old show business, the show I recommend, decided that they wanted to go to a premium tier through Earwolf's premium service, which was called Howl.
Howl FM.
Of course, they got rid of Howl. And now that became part of Stitcher, or Howl bought Stitcher, or Stitcher bought Howl, or something happened there.
Mm-hmm.
So now Stitcher, which we've been on for a long time, which is a way to get podcasts on your phone, is the thing. But they now that has a premium tier. So now if you want Gilbert Gottfried's bonus episodes, which come out once a week, which are about 30 minutes long, which sometimes are just expanded versions of the regular show, sometimes they're just taking listener emails and comments, and sometimes their movie reviews. It could be anything. Those are now locked behind the Stitcher premium paywall. So I signed up for that.
Which has been a model that Mark Maron started doing a couple years ago.
Because he's an Earwolf guy.
Three or four years ago, where, and now How Did This Get Made does that.
Yeah.
So speaking of YouTube, the end around it. So they will put, like, the last 6 months will be free.
Yes.
But any of the older stuff is behind the paywall.
Yes.
And with Maron, he's got 500, he's got 800 episodes or something. So if you want to get the Gallagher episode where Gallagher storms out on it.
Yeah.
But here's a little tip.
Yeah.
YouTube, a lot of these shows have been posted on YouTube.
A lot of them are.
So I have managed to listen to some older episodes and stuff.
But there's a convenience factor that's not there.
Right.
So to pay, you're getting the convenience factor, plus you're getting access to the content. And so I said, I will cough up for this. I paid, I think you got a 90-day trial or a 45-day trial for free, and then, you know, $35 for a year. So I'm out $3 a month for this. And I'm like, okay, well, I will go through and I will listen to some of these other Stitcher premium shows because I'm paying. So, you know, Gilbert is now free. Gilbert doesn't interrupt the show with a commercial, which they kind of cut in and always sounded bad to me anyway. So at least I'm not getting that.
You don't
want to
hear Gilbert read a squatty potty.
Yeah, there is a convenience factor to not having the commercials. And like Maron still has commercials. I'm not sure why that is. But anyway, you get that.
But he has a couple at the beginning.
Yeah, and then it's pretty commercial free. But anyway, so I go, what else is on here? And then I find that Cliff Nesterhoff has a show on Stitcher Premium called Classic Showbiz with Cliff Nesterhoff. It's produced by Mark Maron's producer and his company, and Earwolf. And that show, which if you read The Comedians by Cliff Nesterhoff, which I think we both have.
Yes.
Which is a very good book about the history of comedy. It's basically an expanded version of some of the stories from that book. Like, you'll hear he'll talk about some old comedian, and then you'll hear a clip of that old comedian. It's stories that are in that book, but they're expanded, which much more detail, and that was good.
And those were all, speaking of lost internet content.
Yeah.
Then Cliff Nesterhoff used to write blogs for The Best Show period on Def WFUM.
Yeah, that's Tom Sharpling.
FMZ Tom Sharpling.
Which, yeah, okay.
And there were blogs for that. And
right,
a lot
and
of
he's
the blogs,
got a, he's got a website. That's
a lot
got
of
those
stories ended up being expanded.
So Cliff has those, and I said I'll listen to these. Well, Cliff Nesterhaus have a show. There's more value, so I get all the Cliff Nesterhaus show. But there's four of those.
Sure.
Well, and they were great. They're about half an hour, and they were great. And I like Cliff. He's good storyteller, and he reads them, and those are good. And then speaking of Tom Sharpling, there was a show that Mark Maron and him did called the Mark and Tom Show. And they did four of those. And that's basically Mark and Tom with no guests and no subject matter. Just two guys shooting the shit.
Tom Sharpling's show is pretty rambling, yeah. And he kind of does it live. And
so there's like four of those. And they're like, and those are from 2014 or something. And I listen to all those, and those are good. So I'm trying to get some value out of this, and I think I am. So I'm not unhappy with Stitcher Premium. Their app works well. There's some things it doesn't have. It doesn't have fast forward and rewind on lock screen. Now, I'm going to get technical here. Okay. But when you have a phone and you're driving down the road and your screen is locked and you missed something and you want to rewind,
yeah, right.
You don't have to unlock the phone. You can just hit the back button.
It doesn't
button
have the quick
right.
back button.
It has a forward button, but not a back button or one or the other. It should have both. It doesn't. Google Play Music has both. It doesn't have that. So that's a complaint. And then the other thing is, you know, there's shows that aren't on Stitcher at all. Mm-hmm. Not on the premium, not on the free. And who is that? Well, there's a company called Podcast One that has a show on there called Penn Sunday School, which I've talked about many times.
Which is what, part of the Adam Carolla network?
I think it's Adam Carolla and a bunch of other guys. There's a bunch of wrestling guys that are on Podcast One, like Chris Jericho and Jim Ross, who have good shows, and I like those shows. And you can't get those through Google Play Music. You can't get those through Stitcher. So you have to get the Podcast One app, or you can download them from the computer or something like that. So I said, all right, I'm going to get this Podcast One app. So I get the Podcast One app, and I find Penn Sunday School, and I think I listen to Jim Ross on there or something, so I'm listening to these. But as I'm listening, driving down the road, and I have a Bluetooth controller in my car that gives me Bluetooth, even though it doesn't have Bluetooth, it lines in Bluetooth, and then it has Play Pause on there. Well, that button doesn't work. You have Play Pause on my Bluetooth speaker. That doesn't work. And that works with Google Play Music. If I'm listening to music, if I'm at the gym, I have my Bluetooth headphones, I can pause, skip tracks. Well, the Podcast One app doesn't work with Bluetooth button functionality. So what the fuck? So now I'm listening to Penn. I'm driving down the road. I got to pause it. If I'm, you know, it's annoying. So they have an app that's not as good as that app. Then there's shows that.
The rage in this man.
Then there's
over
a friend.
All the podcast
there's a friend who has a podcast, what I won't even mention here because I don't want to put them on blast for doing this. I'll do it privately, who had started a podcast, and I said, I will listen and give my thoughts.
But I can guess
okay,
who this person
but this person
is.
Put their show on SoundCloud. Well, I wanted to get the SoundCloud shows. How do I get those? Stitcher? No. Google Play Music? No. Now, granted, they could probably add their show on there. I don't know if SoundCloud locks them down. But if you want to listen to the SoundCloud podcast, guess what you got to get, Corey? The SoundCloud app. Well, Jesus motherfucking Christ, I'm already to three fucking apps to listen to all this shit.
Now what? Now okay, here's another thing.
And I'm annoyed.
Did we do?
Fucking annoyed.
You and I both did. What was the show that we did in Royal Oak over at the Echo Network?
Oh God, that is Motown Mojo Live.
Motown Mojo Live.
Yes, we've both been a guest on Motown Mojo Live.
Now that is on a podcast network.
Yes.
So what they do now is that people build these studios and they, you know, put a bunch of shows on and you rent studio time.
Yes.
And those guys were perfectly nice and it was
yeah.
a fun show.
Yeah, they did a nice enough job.
But
I enjoyed
it. When you try to find the individual episodes
yes.
in the iTunes feed,
yes.
you have to scroll through 45
exactly.
shows of
right.
of Tony and the Schnook.
Yes.
And everybody's, you know, everybody's Game of Thrones podcast and everybody's, you know, Doctor Who fan fiction.
The Motown
podcast.
Sports blog.
Yeah.
The Motown
this
and the blobbity bobbity.
The MSU Spartans Report. And
by
all
the
this
way,
stuff.
They made an offer
yeah.
for distribution of Joel Radio.
Oh, did they?
And
on
that
the
offer,
Echo Network?
That offer was declined. Yeah. Because my feeling is I've tried to make the show as available as possible. I am on Stitcher. I am on Google Play Music. I am on iTunes. You can go to JewelRadio.net. The complete archives are up there if you ever. Now, do I have the complete archives on everything? No. And that is because, and maybe I should do that, but I think it makes it harder to load the feed. And so I think there's only 26 shows in the feed or 20 shows in the feed. There's a setting for that. But if you want to get Joel Radio, I got a million different fucking ways to get it. So it's not on SoundCloud.
Maybe it's for the best of those archives
whatever.
Are buried.
But you know what? It's fine. If you want to get any show that I've ever done, it's funny. You know, remember Harry's show that I had to take down?
Yes.
Harry's given me permission to put that back up. And then
thank Jesus, thank Odin.
And then there's another guy. Buddha. There's another guy who got arrested that was on the show, and we pulled that one. But aside from that, all of the complete 12 years of our
should remain buried.
I think that one will remain buried. But so Joel Radio is available everywhere. But goddamn fucking Podcast One and Stitcher and all you motherfuckers with your goddamn thing, because it's the same thing with streaming. Where, how do you stream this? Well, it's on Netflix. Well, now it's not on Netflix. Okay. Now it's on Amazon. This is on Amazon. It's not on Amazon. It's on Hulu. Well, right. Now it's on Hulu. So, now it's on the fucking CBS goddamn fucking Star Trek fucking goddamn motherfucker
app.
And it's on this. And fuck every... God damn it, fuck!
All right, so that's the thing. So everybody's cutting the cord, right? The millennials with their cutting them with the cords, and they got out their pruning shears, and they don't even know what a pruning shear is.
Ruined it.
And they all said, well, let's cut the cable because these cable prices are too high, primarily driven by the sports league. You want to know who the villain is in almost all of American life? The NFL.
Well,
those dirty cocksucking money grubbing whores.
Yes.
Are kind of a driver of all bad
things. It's all sports. It's all sports league.
Yeah. The MLB and NBA aren't getting off easy on this either. But NFL costs so much
that
it then drives the cost of ESPN up.
ESPN is like $8 out of your cable bill.
$8 per subscriber.
Now, the cable companies, being very smart, have said, we now have tiers without
ESPN.
Skinny
packages, yeah.
Which means it really saves you money so you don't completely abandon their service.
Well, ESPN's going to be in trouble.
And ESPN's mad about that because ESPN's revenue is way down because people are going, yeah, I'll keep my cable. I'll just get rid of ESPN.
But you know what's going to ultimately happen with that?
Yeah.
If ESPN goes away.
No.
Then MLB Network.
Well.
Then NFL Network.
Well.
Then NBA Network.
No.
We're all going to start charging you premiums to have.
And that's happening too. So the NFL is going on to Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be exclusive to Amazon Prime, but Amazon Prime's going to have
NFL. They're going to stream Thursday night games on Facebook.
Yes. I think Facebook and Amazon have done some NFL deals.
Now,
Twitter had it last year.
Being beyond the point of return in our ages.
Yes.
Where I'm ever going to ever fucking want to watch a football game on my phone.
No. I have.
I remember I used to have a portable television in when it was still analog signals. And
keep going, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, I keep going. I'm being an idiot right now.
And one night one time I was working.
Yeah.
And I had to work the Super Bowl.
Oh.
I was working a retail job. I had to work the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So at my lunch break, or like dinner break, I was out in my car on this portable television trying to watch the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Because I was like, why are we open during the Super Bowl? And it was a dumb idea.
Sure.
Anyway, that was the last time I watched something on a tiny TV.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, if you have Verizon, you get NFL Red Zone for free. Sure. And there's ways. But anyway, let's fix podcasting first before we fix streaming.
Okay.
What, Corey Hall, is your experience with podcasting? Are you having a hard time getting any shows? Or how are you using it?
Well,
what are you doing? You're not jumping in on Stitcher Premium?
No, because here's the thing. I already pay for Netflix, Amazon, Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
I already have all three of those services.
Yeah.
So if you break that down, that's $30 a month.
Exactly.
On top of the obscene cable prices I'm paying.
Yeah.
So there's a point where you tap out. There is not a bigger Star Trek mark than me. There's not a bigger...
Right.
Well, there are bigger ones, but,
No, there's much bigger ones.
Yeah. I mean...
Physically, and...
yes. Both physically and emotionally.
There's bigger Star Trek.
But I'm a big Star Trek. I've watched...
You are interested in the new Star Trek.
I've watched 10 million hours of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've watched Star Trek all over the place. I'm not buying that goddamn CBS All Access.
No.
They can shit up a rope. I will not be fooled. I'm not doing it. I'm not having it.
Well, and another reason that's a con too is that CBS is the one major network that's not on Hulu because the other three are. I think CW isn't, or not all of CW.
Do they pull the CW? Maybe they move
I don't know if
CW moved to Netflix.
Yeah, but but Hulu has that week's television shows, everything except CBS. So you can go Hulu. plus sure. the CBS All Access, and now you're covered on broadcast. But then if you want HBO streaming, you can go to HBO Go, or no, it's HBO Now, and then it's just a whole, it's a quagmire. So podcasting, what are you doing? So you tell podcasting.
I just run through iTunes.
So you do iTunes, and you direct download to your phone.
Yeah, or stream.
Or stream.
I mean, if I'm gonna go for a walk or you'll just go to the gym or something,
use your
I'll
data.
Download them. Yeah.
Use your. Oh, you're gonna go. Okay.
I'll download them, or you know,
and,
whatever.
And but you are now walled off from. But the Podcast One stuff is on iTunes, as far as you know.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Penn is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think iTunes is the one people are afraid of. And I may be able to get iTunes on Android, but and maybe that's me just being stubborn and going, I don't like Apple because I don't. But yeah, I'm not. I liked what I had, and actually, I'd be fine if everything was Stitcher. I would be fine if give me Stitcher with everything. I'll pay the $3. I'm good. I'm happy to support the people that make the content that I like. Yeah, I do Patreon for some
you
guys.
Would not
I mean,
believe,
I will do. I will spend money.
You would not believe the kvetching and bitching that goes on.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
For, you know, I contributed to the Mystery Science Theater. Kickstarter.
Okay, yeah.
To bring back Mystery Science
Sure.
Theater, which they did, and it's on Netflix now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and charged $70 a ticket for the live show. So there is even a breaking point for a guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Even something I'm a huge fan of.
Right, yeah.
I'm a huge MST fan. I bought most of the DVD sets,
mm-hmm.
which are stacks of them, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah,
those are, you know, $60 a pop on those.
And most of those are streaming now.
Yeah,
and you're paying again
well,
for those. Essentially,
the nature of that show is that you can never be sure.
Yeah.
Which movies are going to go? They're going to lose the rights
yeah,
to.
That's true, yeah.
So some of the sets I have, like all these sets on my shelf.
Yeah.
Some of them are like $300, and some of them are $30.
Okay.
So because you never know which ones are going right. to be available. Anyway, so then you got that issue too. You've got what's on streaming,
yeah.
what's coming off streaming,
yeah.
what's coming off Netflix, what's coming off Hulu.
Yeah.
Stuff
and podcasting is ending up that way.
So this beautiful, glorious future where we have access to all media is a bunch of shit. Now, I don't pirate shit. I don't go on Pirate Bay and all those kind of shit.
They're ultimately winning in the sense that, shit, man, maybe I just pay for like a VPN, which is what you're supposed to use if you torrent stuff because they can't find your IP address.
Right.
Why not just pay for the IP address and just steal everything? Because I'm sure the Stitcher premium content is probably on there.
I do believe...
And I'm sure that that stuff is on there.
Well,
and that stuff doesn't go away. And you want that Star Trek show? And if you said to me, if I wanted to watch that Star Trek show, I would be more likely to just go, fuck it, I'm going to steal this.
Being someone who creates content.
Yeah.
I like to get paid for the content, except for this show.
Yes, well, I'll give you 50 cents a show.
When's the Patreon coming out?
Never. But
what we're
saying, guys,
don't give money to Stitcher. Give it to us.
Well, you could give it to us, but I don't even want that money. I just want it. I want to make it as easy as humanly possible to listen to this show because I think it's good for the fans. I think it's good for having an audience here. If I want to sell T-shirts to make money, I can always sell T-shirts to make money. I could always do it.
When is that going to start?
I know because I don't want to sell T-shirts. That's why I don't sell T-shirts after my comedy gigs because I don't want to fucking stand there like a fucking idiot hoping you buy my shirt. I'd rather just have you enjoy the show. And when people are out there hawking T-shirts, I'll be halfway home from Escanaba because I didn't want to stay the night. But here's the point. This is getting to be re-goddamn-diculous, and we're trying to help people be entertained. And to put things behind the paywall is limiting our own audience. It's limiting everything. And look, maybe people are happy and people won't care that they don't have access to Gilbert... premium content, or they don't have access to Penn Sunday School. Penn Sunday School helped me lose 80 pounds. And, you know, God damn it, when I say to people, hey, listen to this Penn Sunday School, which people ask me how I lost weight, and I send them the link to it, and people go, I can't get to the link because it's not there or something, or it's not on the service I use. I go, well, you know, maybe this person doesn't lose 80 pounds or doesn't do something to better their lives. And so, yeah, it's trivial. Do we want to hear Gilbert Gottfried talk about the creator?
Or listen to Penn talk about monkeys for...
Or listen to Gilbert Gottfried interview the director of Sharknado 5, which is completely idiotic. But people should be able to do that. And it's all just making that more difficult. And the world doesn't need that. And it's just greed and, you know... it just sucks. And it sucks for me. It makes my life more difficult. It makes things that I like less accessible. And I'm savvy. I'm as savvy as anybody. I mean, I'm not saying there's guys who aren't.
I wish we had drops.
Well, no, but I'm saying I technically can get anything. There's almost nothing where you go, did you see this? Did you find this? Hey, this girl got naked on some show. Whatever. I can find all that. I'm not hurting to find access to things. But God damn it if I'm not spending $200-$300 a month on shit that I like. Because I do like supporting those. And I do like the convenience of getting things that way. And it's just making it hard. And it's making it go, you know, maybe I just throw up my hands and I pay for a VPN and then I don't give any of these guys money. And well, you know, that's an option. And it's not an option that I'm going on. And I support YouTube content creators on Patreon. There's video game guys that I give money to so they can make videos about, you know, frame rates of PlayStation 4 games versus Xbox One games. Because I care about that. And I know I sound like a fucking douchebag who never gets laid, but, you know, whatever. I am. It's not true.
Say, by the way,
I'm a douchebag who does get laid, so fuck you.
By the way, I did not say that. Well, I'm glad you put the word
you do that. Yes. Believe me. But it's getting annoying. It's getting to be re-goddamn ridiculous, and I'm sick of it.
Well, there you have it.
And this will solve none of it.
Well, there it is from one honest American. But it's the problem is everybody I watch on YouTube is also like putting their hand out.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I watch guys that review, like, action figures
and
old horror movies and all kinds of weird nerdy shit. And they're, like, some of them are starting to be bitching about how nobody's paying for their content.
Yeah, it's...
Well, you can't support...
Yeah.
This is the problem with the democratized internet media. For the first, 50 years of television... You had advertising that supported television broadcasting, and you had three networks and maybe four networks if you were lucky. And those people got paid good money to be on television because the advertising supported it. This democratized internet shit, if you can't have 1,000 guys on YouTube putting their hand out and going, hit my Patreon up. And you, as a consumer, are going to eventually be tapped out.
Well, you know, advertising was supporting a lot of these guys, but then YouTube... on a whim, apparently, can change what your royalty rate is on YouTube because there's a lot of like professional wrestling companies who are making money on YouTube. But because of like what happened is believe me, this is deeper than we're going to go here because I want to move on. But video game streaming is a big thing. And apparently one of the PewDiePie and some other guy made comments that were considered racist or hateful.
Yes.
And so they decided that those guys will no longer get the royalty rates that they did. And professional wrestling is violent content. And because of those guys, they were, it's just, so they cut back on that royalty
rate.
There was a big stink. You can deep dive in that if you like.
Well, there was a couple advertisers thought that, and there are crazy alt-right guys.
There are.
If you dig on YouTube, there's guys that are like, you know.
There's every thing you want. Alt-right, off-left, left, hate.
Send those monkeys back to Africa, guys, right out there making videos.
There's naked girls on YouTube, if you know where to look. I mean, there's everything
you
want.
Well, I got to keep looking for those.
Well, I'll tell you where. Again, right. I'm pretty savvy, like I said.
But, you know, I mean, there's so much abundant porn in the world that. But then there's any guy who's got political content at all.
Yeah.
And there's also everybody reacts to everybody's videos.
Yeah.
There's a guy, Angry Joe, who reviews video games. And
there's Angry Movie Guys.
Sure. But Angry Joe had a thing where he told the fans to kiss his ass and he shut off the comments.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm now seeing 15 guys responding to Angry Joe shutting off the comments. Because they just make it all. It's like YouTube is a big, like in the 50s, they'd have answer songs.
Yeah.
Like, there'd be Work With Me, Annie. Then Annie Don't Work No More.
Right.
Then Annie's Aunt Fanny. Like, well, they do all these, like...
Different twists.
Yeah. A girl, you know, they'd be like, get a job. And then the girl would be like, I got a job. Whatever. they do responses to each other. That's how YouTube is now. It's just all guys going...
The real Roxanne.
Yeah, exactly. There's guys... rap is... Hip-hop's got a lot of
exactly,
that.
Yeah.
And now it's guys commenting on other guys' videos. It's an incestuous cycle.
Maybe this whole thing just collapses under its own weight and we figure out what this is. But it seems like all of these things, here's the solution that we figured out. Here's the solution that all of the content creators, whether they be big corporations like Viacom, whether they be these podcasting companies like Stitcher, whether they be Google, YouTube, whatever, open your fucking wallet. That's the answer to everything. Open your wallet and fucking pay us. That's the solution to everything.
But that's Amazon and Google.
It is.
And these guys don't want
to. That's where we're heading.
They don't want to take.
It's just costing us more money, and it's not good.
They just want to take that money.
Well, speaking of streaming, let's talk about HBO, which I stream, even though I have it on cable.
You have the HBO Go?
The HBO Go. I watched The Defiant Ones, which is a documentary about Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. It is sort of a documentary about two guys and their careers and then how they came together to create Beats, which made headphones and was sold to Apple and for over $1 billion and made the guys, not that they weren't both rich, but now they're fabulously wealthy and titans of industry and all that stuff. And real good documentary. It was made by one of the Hughes brothers who made Menace to Society. I think Alan Hughes is the guy who made it. So there's a well-known director that did this. Did a great job on it. Both guys real forthcoming. If there's a negative to it is that it's, I think it's four parts at over an hour per part. So you're in this for 5 hours?
I tried to watch a little bit of it, and I realized this was beyond my care.
Well, the thing about it is that their careers, especially like Jimmy's career has been longer because Jimmy was in the game, you know, a decade before Dr. Dre. And, you know, Jimmy Iovine worked with John Lennon. He worked with Bruce Springsteen. He worked with, you know, Stevie Nicks. He was Stevie Nicks' boyfriend for a long time. And that's all interesting. That's in there. And then, you know, Dre, you know, if you know the Dr. Dre story. But Dre, in a sense, is a little more interesting because Dre, you know, was in the middle of the NWA thing and the Eazy-E thing and the Tupac thing and the Snoop Dogg thing and Suge Knight and all of those things and controversies. And, you know, Dr. Dre was, it's in the documentary, how he beat up a woman who did some bad press on him that he didn't like, and he drinking problem and his arrests and just, and I think he's like never been publicly on the record on film anyway talking about those things. So that was interesting if you're a fan of that 90s West Coast rap thing and all
God
that
knows,
that's all in there.
And God knows Corey Hall is.
Well, I'm talking to more people than just you right now, I believe.
I know, I'm just saying that's why.
But I mean if you're into that, I think this is probably, cuz I've seen a lot of you know, I mean, I watched Straight Outta Compton, and I've watched this story told in other ways and other documentaries. I think this is clearly the best version of that that I've ever seen, and Dre was super candid about everything in there. So it was very good. I thought they did a great job with it, and of course it leads up to how did they come up with the idea for headphones, and how did they make their headphones, what makes their headphones different, how did Apple acquire them, how did Dr. Dre, I think it's the first thing in the documentary, Dr. Dre almost fucked that up. He almost fucked up the deal because him and his buddies got drunk and went on Snapchat or Facebook or Instagram or something and announced it early. And that's pretty interesting and really good job with it. I like rock and roll documentaries, and there's enough, you know, even if you don't like hip hop, I think Dr. Dre's story is pretty interesting. And, you know, Jimmy gives him a lot of credit about, you know, and Jimmy would know because he was an engineer before he was a producer about, you know, the sonics of like Dr. Dre's rap production and how Dr. Dre in front of a mixer can make things sound better than almost anybody in the world because he just has an ear for it, which I think is cool to hear, you know, guys who have that skill. So it's very good. It's on HBO. It's a long haul. But if you like any of those topics, whether it be 70s rock and roll and Jimmy Iovine, technology, hip hop and hip hop feuds and all of those things, and you want to know what happened at the Source Awards when Suge Knight went off on everybody, that's all in there.
I've been waiting to hear about that.
It's real good. So I highly recommend The Defiant Ones on HBO. Real good documentary. Again, maybe it might be too much for most people, but I dug it. So I recommend that. So you didn't see it.
I watched a little bit of it. But, you know, I think you maybe can have an easier time watching topics you're not as interested. I mean, the headphones thing might interest me. Well, I might like to see that, but the
you can sit through.
I would be lying.
All of it, or you can just watch the last one if you want to know about it. I mean, that's the thing about that actually is good, is because it's broken into hunks. You know, all of the, you know, like the big Suge Knight feud and the East Coast West Coast war is sort of contained to one episode, and so you know what I mean. You can watch it in hunks if you wanted to, like you could watch, you know, a Ken Burns documentary if you just wanted to watch.
I'm more of an East Coast hip hop.
Well, there's in there too.
But yeah, I mean, which,
well, Puffy's in it.
Well, there's a guy I really care about.
But you know, what I mean, Puffy's not. But I mean, you know, it's a documentary about Dre that Puffy sat for interviews for, and Springsteen sat for interviews about this, and a lot of big famous guys, Stevie Nicks, and you know, so it's well done. It's
a lot of good
cooperation there.
I'll try and dive.
Well, let me ask you this, because I don't watch anymore, but you do. Game of Thrones. Tell us what's going on there. You don't have to spoil it for anyone, but apparently this week on Game of Thrones, everyone lost their goddamn minds again, and I don't think it takes much for people to lose their goddamn minds, but. Because to me, that show just became a slog of characters that I don't know, that I don't understand where anything's going, that's all foreshadowing with really no payoff.
Here's what,
and I stopped giving a fuck.
We're getting to the payoff.
Oh!
That's what that's what really everybody lost their minds over, is that we've finally gotten to... We've had characters that have been wandering the earth in... spread across continents for seasons, you know. There are people, there are characters that have not interacted together in like four seasons.
Okay.
Well, in this, there's now, we're down to the last, they split the last season, as they do with every goddamn thing.
Yeah, that's they thank you, Sopranos.
I know, they've stretched everything out. Well, with the Hunger Games and
the
Harry Potter, where they made it into two movies, and Twilight, and every goddamn fucked up franchise, because they can't take enough of your money! Much like with the Stitcher apps.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting upset.
Oh.
Well, they took the last season of Game of Thrones. And by the way, these goddamn books aren't done yet.
Yeah, he hasn't written the final book.
George R.R. Martin started the goddamn books in like the late 90s. The first book came out in like 96 or 7. And we're still waiting on the last fucking book.
So
and the show just said... Hey, fuck this. We're finishing this.
Well, yeah. Is the show caught up with the book, or is the show now moving further than the book?
They're going to end it. They're going to end the whole thing before he gets the book out.
Oh.
Unless he drops this book in the
next
10 months.
But I always thought like a season of the show was a book, but that's not the case anymore?
No. Now they're off past the books. And some weird like...
I don't even...
And what they're doing now is they're suddenly like, wrap it up!
Well,
so like I said... We're seeing, you want to see dragons and you want to see, like, so this episode, not to spoil
anything.
Well,
if the ultimate Game of Thrones theme is a topless woman with a dragon beheading a guy, that covers Game of Thrones right there.
Half of that happened.
Good.
This week.
All right. Fine.
All right. But this episode was, like I said, a lot of fan service.
Okay.
Like a lot of things that have been pending for a long time are finally happening and characters are getting together that have been split apart. And there's, not to spoil, no spoilers. I'm not giving a spoiler.
No spoilers.
But there is a big climactic battle scene in this one that was very... When Game of Thrones does, yes, in the earlier seasons, particularly in like season 3 and 4, episodes would go by. You wouldn't see your favorite characters.
Yeah.
You'd be in Essos in some part of the other continent.
It'd be two guys on
a
horse talking
line.
To each
yeah,
other
yeah,
for
yeah.
a whole episode.
Storylines you didn't care about. Yeah. Well... they've killed off a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's at least three of the great houses that are gone.
Okay.
Like, they've killed every member of the houses. So we now cut down on a lot of those storylines. We're kind of centering on the main people, the core people, and it seems like they're ramping up the timeline.
Okay.
They're kind of like pacing the action up. And this one ends with an insane... action sequence.
But they've got a final date for that, right? They've got a... This is when Game of Thrones goes off the air.
Another 18 goddamn months.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, they know when it's ending and it's...
I don't really understand HBO's business model because this is their biggest show.
Yeah.
And it's playing in the summer.
That... We'll talk about that when it comes to movies. I don't think any of that shit really means much anymore.
With the streaming and time delay.
I think they figured, like, they'd rather get it when it's a soft market for television, maybe. That they can capture.
That they've
people.
Got the scene.
And
themselves.
I think a show like that is almost season. It's time.
It's season resistant.
People. It's destination television. Now look, You're completely right that Game of Thrones, when they produce something, they do it. It's top notch all the way around. I'm glad that I watched the Game of Thrones that I watched. I'm also really glad that I don't watch it anymore. And now, granted, am I still watching I'm Dying Up Here and suffering through that fucking shit? Yes. But, well, you know, I mean, I don't. The fact that I've skipped three seasons of Game of Thrones and don't feel like I missed a thing, I'm happy with.
This season,
so I'm good.
This season of Game of Thrones, I mean, the whole show is top notch.
Right.
From a production standpoint.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
The scale of the stuff that they're doing now is insane.
Yeah.
You didn't even see the Battle of the Bastards, which was last year, which was crazy.
Did not.
And is as good as anything you'll see in a movie theater. It really is.
Yeah, I agree.
On the level of
I
anything.
Give them
the
all
movies.
Credit in the world.
So, and this last night they delivered that.
Yeah.
And Twitter lost their minds and flipped out. No, Twitter will lose their mind over.
Yeah, then that's. But I noticed it was more losing their minds than usual.
Twitter will wig the fuck out over, you know, look at this cat wearing a wig.
All right, yeah.
But this was deserved. It was the last 10 minutes of the show were just edge of your seat excitement.
All right.
You didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, good.
Major characters were in serious peril. Mm. Looked like things were going to be all over. People
well,
getting
you know,
slaughtered. It was cool.
This is my theory, and I think I've done it once since I say I quote-unquote stopped watching Game of Thrones. I could just go watch this one, and I will tell you from... I think I watched one of the finales of a season that I didn't watch, but I said I'll be watching the finale if people talk about
it. Sure.
I think I would enjoy this as much with no context as if I had the context of watching the whole previous seasons. I think, for me personally. I'm not speaking for the world.
The context does enrich...
It may... But I think I could probably just sit down and watch this Game of Thrones and go, okay, yeah, all right, cool. Dragons, fucking cool,
yeah,
man.
I mean, I
Blood,
know.
Let's go.
When you start going about
tits,
the,
I
you
like
start
it.
The getting into the origins of Highgarden and how it was a throne of the Andals.
Yeah.
You know, that goes on forever. You could get as deep with it as you want to, or you can just enjoy it on the spectacle level of, look at this big clash of armies.
There's a thing that happens now with, I guess because there's just so much content. And this is not even just episodic television or movies. And I think this even goes for things like fighting. Like I watch UFC and like I have things don't capture my imagination anymore because there's just so much and there's always a UFC every week, basically. So I don't even know. Like when I sit down to watch UFC, I don't know what the matches are, generally speaking. Now, I did watch when I was in Oklahoma the last night of the gathering, I actually left to watch Daniel Cormier versus Jon Jones because I knew what that was and I went to a Buffalo Wild Wings and an Uber and did that. But I don't even know what the undercard is. And, you know, I mean, wrestling, which I'm following more closely than ever, I'm still kind of on board with at least New Japan. I know what's going on. But like WWE, I don't really know what those matches. If I sit down to watch one of their pay-per-view shows on their network, I don't really know what the matches are most of the time. I just, there's no television show. Like even Star Wars is coming out, Last Jedi. I'm just like, I'm going to watch that Star Wars. I'll probably see it opening night like I have the last couple. But am I getting into the nuances of what that one's going to be about?
Well,
no, I'm not.
There's more content.
I'm not. I don't care.
There's more content than ever.
Even the Last Planet of the Apes. I just like I went and I'll watch it and I don't need to know a whole lot ahead of time.
You know, one of the things about that Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
You know, Marvel has you trained now to watch stingers.
Yeah.
And most of the other, actually DC doesn't do it.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Good on you, DC.
I sat through all the goddamn credits for Man of Steel. I sat through like 12 minutes of credits on Man of Steel for no stinger.
I sat through the Spider-Man ones.
Yeah, and the Spider-Man ones, nothing happened.
Yeah.
It was really a minor, you know.
And again, they need to, and hopefully, I encourage the bootlegging of those stingers. Because I would like to know before I go out, next time I go to a Marvel, I'm going to see, like, is the stinger available online? Because if it is, I'm just not going to
see it. Well, there's a stinger report, and people go, is
right,
there a
stinger? Right, but can you see it?
Yeah. But, you know,
I would like to see it if I'm going to watch.
Marvel's overexposing themselves on content.
Oh, my God,
there's too many Marvel movies.
Yeah. But
because
it's like you can't get
have,
excited for them.
What are we going to have? We're going to have Thor in a
couple
months.
Fall.
Yeah.
So that's, if you consider.
And then right after that, Black Panther.
So
which looks, actually,
okay,
Black
but,
Panther looks cool. The trailer for that looks really
but
good.
But you've had, if you count Spider-Man as MCU, which it is, that's three this year with Guardians. There was four this year. Guardians was the first one, right?
There was Guardians. There's Spider-Man Homecoming.
So it was Doctor Strange, which was last
Doctor
year.
Doctor Strange was last year.
Guardians, Spider-Man,
but
Thor.
But they're stacked every 5 months.
It's yeah.
4 months.
But who can get excited? You can't get hype.
I don't
these.
Know. You know, Comic-Con.
Anymore.
Just,
I wish we could.
Comic-Con just happened.
Yeah.
And there were leaks, of course, from Comic-Con. And somebody, you know, there was in the hall footage of Infinity War, which is the Avengers movie they've been building up to for the last 8 years. And people were screaming in that auditorium out of their minds with each like reveal of each character that's in it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I went, oh, okay.
But you're more like, just show me the movie. That's where I'm at.
We're jaded. We're old.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's it either. Because I can tell you, I could get excited for something. But I think the deluge of this stuff is making that not possible. I was excited for Force Awakens, and I was excited for Rogue One. Last Jedi hasn't gotten me excited so far. And, you know, Planet of the Apes, which I think is the best modern trilogy, sci-fi, fandom type thing. I wasn't excited for the third one. I went and saw it right away and thought it was great when I saw it. But I didn't. I just it's a very weird thing.
You know
now.
What? You know what?
we're bombarding everybody with so many things that it's almost.
You know what I'm excited for?
Like not getting excited is the new getting excited or something. I don't know.
But look, one, it's our age. You just can't remain enthused about everything.
No, but it's not.
Hollywood's got to work the shaft a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Get the balls involved, Hollywood. It takes more for me to get excited about anything. Look, you know what movie I'm excited about seeing?
What's
Logan
that?
Lucky.
Yeah.
Because that's a Steven Soderbergh movie.
Okay, he hasn't made one in a while.
And Soderbergh's got a track record. And even his bad movie, like, what was the one with Gina Carano?
I forget the name, but that was a piece of shit I saw.
But it at least had some merit.
It was a bad born clone with a chick, yeah.
But it's at least I want to know what he's going to do with
it. Yeah, he's interesting.
He's always interesting.
Right, yeah.
So I'm going for directors at this point. I'm not... The franchises...
Well, like Fincher's Netflix series, the Mindhunter thing... I'm excited for, but I also, like, he's been making 8 seasons of House of Cards that I've, aside from the first 2 seasons, episode 1, I've just summarily not even seen.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I'm going, like, I'm excited for this, but then if I see it, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Oh, did you see American Vandal? I put that on my Facebook the other day.
I did not see that yet.
Well, I watched this, and it's a true crime series, a la Making a Murderer. And it's about a high school kid who was accused of vandalizing... vehicles.
Okay.
And a guy made a documentary about, my theory is he was suspended from school, but he's actually innocent. And it's a true crime series. And I'm going, yeah, this seems like they're taking the piss.
And so it's a mockumentary?
And it's a mockumentary. And I laughed at the trailer. And then they said an 8-part Netflix series. And I went like, I'm good. I laughed at the 2-minute trailer. I'm out.
Oh, now speaking of... I can't.
So that
speaking of a mockumentary, semi documentary, meta documentary. I watched my Scientology movie.
Oh, okay,
Louis Theroux.
Hey, Louis Theroux does good documentaries.
Yeah, Louis Theroux used to do. First time I saw him was on. He's from England, so he did a lot of BBC stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he used to do Michael Moore's TV Nation. He was one of the correspondents. On
he's
that,
like a,
which was the. Prototype for the Daily Show.
Personality-driven documentary. I am in the documentary.
Although
Louis is,
Louis's personality is very, very dry.
Yeah,
acerbic and kind of irritating. And I would recommend people watch my Scientology movie. I mean, if you've seen Going Clear or the Leah Remini, you've gotten covered this territory.
That's becoming a genre.
It is.
Scientology cult.
But he takes a very he takes this weird approach where they cast actors to recreate the Scientology.
Like he goes and witnesses things or people give reports on them or something.
Yeah, they recreate behind the scenes incidents and also the like videos. Like they hire a guy to play David Miscavige and they cast him.
Yeah.
And then they take actual Scientology escapees, guys who are out of the business. And they make them watch the casting and go through the process again. So it's like cruel.
Right.
He's kind of like shoving this all back in this guy's face.
Yeah.
And it's anyway, it's worth seeing.
Okay.
I came away with a kind of a negative opinion of Louis Theroux.
Yeah.
Not that I was positive on Scientology, which I'm not. It's still a horrific Ponzi scheme, scam, bullshit.
It is, yes.
Crime. I walked by one of the Scientology buildings in L.A. on the one that's right on Hollywood Boulevard, and felt creeped out by it.
Yeah.
There was nobody in it.
Yeah.
There was like one.
Well, isn't there 30,000 Scientologists in America or something?
Yeah,
like that,
it's
which
a
we
bizarre
learned
thing where
clear.
they now they're renovating their building in Detroit.
Where is their building in Detroit?
They have
now?
The building downtown.
Oh.
That's like I think on Griswold. And
yeah, maybe I have seen
they're
that
renovating thing. That.
Jesus.
Yeah, there's no that's the thing. There's an extremely small number of Scientologists, but they're wildly wealthy.
Yeah.
Because they've taken big chunks of money from guys like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And invested that in real estate. Anyway, my Scientology movie, it's on Netflix. Go check it out.
Yeah, it's a couple years old, but it just made it to Netflix. So,
Is it really a couple years old?
Yeah, it was either last year or the year before. I think it might have been the year before.
So,
because I mean, when I do my year-end thing, I want to see the best documentaries of the year, and that one, like, I could not see.
Took a while to get here.
Yeah, I couldn't see that one, and I was annoyed that
it's
year it came
out. It's worth
seeking
out if you want. It's a different, let me tell you, though, it's a different experience. It's not, he's actively making you question his filmmaking techniques while he's making this.
Well, Louis years, I mean, 2 decades ago now, went to the, he did a thing about wrestling when wrestling was real hot in the 90s, where he went and trained at the WCW power plant.
Right.
So you can find that. That was funny.
He
I remember
has
that.
Kind of a George Plimpton-y approach to immersing himself.
It's
in
it's a little Moraka. It's definitely got that kind of, you know, jokey, but.
Right.
You know, sometimes joking about a serious subject, which he does. All right. Let's talk about the actual movies at the movies. I went and saw Detroit over the weekend, which is a movie that was made by Kathryn Bigelow, who last made Zero Dark Thirty, and she made The Hurt Locker before that, among some other things, and got some Oscar acclaim for Hurt Locker. And now, I did not watch a lot of spoilers and didn't know a lot about Detroit other than
having lived here your
whole
life.
Well, it is, and it's a movie about the riots in 1967. And I go, well, I should see this because I'm in Detroit and I know, you know, enough about the riots to be interested in the subject and all that stuff. And I got to tell you, man, first of all, the biggest complaint I have about Detroit, and I know you didn't see it, is number one, when you make a movie that's set in the Detroit riots and it's called Detroit, you would think it's an all-encompassing look at the Detroit, the riots, and the city and what happened there. It is not that movie. You do see how the riots started. Based upon what I know and some of the historical stuff I've read, they were, you know, they did a good job of demonstrating the riots and that kind of stuff and how it started. But it is ultimately a movie about what happened at the Algiers Motel, which is a famous incident that took place during the riots. And even though the riots went on for days and days, this Algiers Motel thing was a thing that happened in one night at the riots. Basically, rogue cops.
It's part of the catalyst.
Right. There was a book. Well, ultimately, the Algiers Motel incident is about cops. A small number of cops, three, who went rogue and decided to use the riots as a reason to mistreat African Americans. And that is ultimately what this movie is about. So if you're looking for how the riots started, how the riots ended, the riots' impact on the city of Detroit, the families affected, stories of people who overcame the riots, none of that is in this movie. And again, that's my own expectation, but I think that's a reasonable expectation.
It's a narrow focus
going into
this. Wider focus.
It is. And
is that kind of like saying, hey, what caused that dam to overflow? And they pick one raindrop instead of the hundreds of millions of raindrops?
Yeah, that's a way to look at it.
Because I think this is the problem we have in this city. The 1967 riots happened. People understand that, gee, that was kind of bad. They have a general vague notion of what they call white flight, in which you know, Caucasians moved out to the suburbs by and large, and communities that were farmland like Troy suddenly got developed in the 60s and expanded. But that was all a process that was already happening. And riots are now were like, well, the fire.
You get like three title screens, you know, three screens of text about Detroit up to 1967. You know what I mean? Like the socioeconomic, you know, African Americans left the South to find factory jobs.
Yeah.
And they settled in Detroit. And Detroit was this population, but the population was 90% black, but it, you know, all that stuff is in the beginning. None of it's at the end, and what you just said there was way more interesting than what the movie tells you about Detroit.
Okay, so it's, I think it's probably, it's a topic, unfortunately, that is not well. People know there was something bad that happened.
Yeah.
People know that that led to a big decline in the city.
Yeah.
They understand that the city hit rock bottom in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. In terms of, actually, it hit rock bottom in the early 90s.
Yeah, but it was sliding downhill for years.
Before things started to rebound. And there were race riots in the 40s in Detroit. The African-American community had problems with the police for decades before the 67 riots. So it's kind of like they took one event and made that this thing.
Well, and again, part of the problem is that the title alone, it should have been the Algiers. Like, there's a book called The Algiers Motel Incident, right, which came out in the late 60s, which was, you know, contemporaneous to when this event happened and the trial of these police and stuff. And that was all, you know, documented in this book. This movie is not based on the book. You know, again, it's about, okay, so they show these rogue cops, three of them, okay? And these cops, they also show you that, you know, it's not a movie where, like, all cops are bad, because they show the cops that investigated the bad cops and the cops that were... So you see all that? So it's kind of like... Ultimately, this is a movie not unlike something like 12 Years a Slave, which we've talked about on this show, where a lot of it is like, we're going to make you feel bad. This is how bad people are. And it's one of these things, and I learned this from going to film school. It's kind of the thing about... And then he kicked a dog. Do you know that theory in film criticism?
Yes.
Where they talk about the villain in the Western.
George Lucas famously said that it's easy to get emotion out of people.
Yeah.
You just strangle a puppy.
Right. They show you the bad guy. The bad guy comes into town, and the bad guy's got his pistols out, and he rides into town, and he's shooting, and he's saying, doggone it, I'm gonna teach you about what's going on. This is my town now, and your sheriff is out. And I am ruling this town. So from here on out, it's here what I say goes. So if you don't like it, you know, and he gives a whole speech and he does all this stuff and he's doing all this bad stuff. And if that wasn't enough, then he kicks the dog. Just so there's no way you could possibly root for the bad guy. The modern version in movies like 12 Years a Slave and Birth of a Nation and now Detroit is, we're going to say the N-word. Lots of times. So if it wasn't enough that this cop was beating guys and firing guns off next to their heads and doing all this stuff that makes him mad, we're going to have him scream the N-word while he's doing it. And that's what they did in 12 Years a Slave, and it's just not necessary.
Well, and it's probably historically accurate.
But yeah, even if it is, it's not there for the sake of accuracy. It is merely there to get an emotional rise out of the audience. That's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, there's no way you could think that these cops were good guys. I mean, when you see this movie, you're sitting there, and it's a guy, you know, Will Poulter is the guy who is the lead sort of bad guy. And you might know him as he's a British actor who played, like, the goofy teenage son in We're the Millers, if you saw that movie, if you know that guy. So he's kind of a goony-looking ginger guy who plays the bad cop, and a couple other guys who are a little more anonymous looking. And, you know, it's just, this movie is just a bad time. It's just not fun. It's just there to make you feel bad, to make you feel guilty. Yeah, you learn about what happens, but the other thing is that, you know, the historical record about what happened, you know, at that incident is not, and part of that is that they had to change the names of all the cops that were the bad cops in the movie. They changed the names of anyone that was accused of anything. The attorney that represented them, his name was changed. So they just, it's one of those things where did this happen? Yeah, something bad happened. We know something bad happened, but this dramatization of it really doesn't serve much purpose other than it's kind of like torture porn. You know, there's 90 minutes of this, which is just people getting tortured. And that's not fun.
Well, and
it's not a good movie.
It's not fun.
It's not a good movie.
It's not doing well at the box office.
It's
it went into wide release this weekend on 3,000 theaters and did $7 million.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's not for good. And, you know, there's one of the Dramatics, one of the Motown singing group that is, you know, they're at the Fox Theater and these riots happen and everyone's got to leave the Fox. And one of these Dramatics ends up at the Algiers Motel and they tell a story. And I go, you know what? A movie about the Dramatics that has this incident in it would have been a much better movie. It's a weird point of view.
I think maybe the title was a big mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because what it's saying absolutely. Is one, I guess there's probably a lot of people bigoted or what have you that don't care about Detroit to begin with.
Right.
And in calling it Detroit, you're putting on the movie, you're placing a burden of a larger narrative.
Yes.
On the movie, so that people are going to expect that this is this sort of all-inclusive or larger story about what happened. And that's not how movies work. Movies have to really work on individual levels and smaller stories, personal stories.
You're right. But, you know, when you hear about, well, there's a movie about Detroit riots, and you hear, you know, the famous stories you know from the riots about, you know, Willie Horton of the Detroit Tigers in his uniform standing on a car and telling the crowds to calm down and go home. That's not in there. You know, there's just stuff that's just like... Boy, I you wish you would have seen some of these things. And the other thing is, you know, and again, Catherine Bigelow, those movies I talked about, Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty, I didn't like.
Yeah.
Hurt Locker was all right, but it was like it won the Oscar for Best Picture, and I didn't think it was worthy of that. Zero Dark Thirty, maybe the most interesting real story that's happened in the last two decades in the world, and you managed to make a movie about a lady staring at a computer monitor. It's a complete bore. I mean, she did a good job with The Raid, but that's like a three-hour movie.
It's a
where
lot
The
of,
Raid is the last
it's
hour.
It's a lot of Jessica Chastain sitting around.
It's dull.
I like Zero Dark Thirty, but Catherine Bigelow is not a filmmaker. She's not a filmmaker you're ever going to go,
no.
Well, I love her work.
No.
She makes things that are intentionally kind of ponderous and important.
Yes.
And have a lot of this,
right.
You know, they carry weight.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean, obviously, look at the box office. People don't want to go get a lecture. At movies.
Yeah.
They want to go and see something that entertains.
There's very...
Now, look at... Okay, Hidden Figures was a big hit.
Absolutely.
Because it was a positive story.
Yes.
Even though it ultimately also reflects institutional racism.
Yeah.
In that, much like the 67 riots, we never... I didn't know that story.
Yeah.
And I've read a bunch of NASA stuff. Mm-hmm. I've seen a bunch of NASA documentaries, and I've followed the space program. I didn't know anything about
Hidden Figures is very good compared to this. This is way better. And there's also a lack of craft. This whole thing is shot handheld, which I guess is supposed to be, you know, the chaos, but it's kind of annoying to sit through a 2 hour and 20 minute movie that's all handheld. In the hands of Scorsese, even without a bigger scope of the Detroit riots, which I'm looking for, in the hands even of an Oliver Stone, in the hands of a guy.
Well, Oliver Stone.
Well, but you know what? Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
Politics aside,
as nuts as
crazy
he is now.
Shit. Yeah. Oliver Stone knows how to make a fucking good movie.
He does.
Francis Ford Coppola knows how to make a good movie. And even though he's self-indulgent, there's a craft that Spielberg has. There's a craft that some of these old hands have. And even some of the new hands. You know, J.J. Abrams is a very good hand. He's very good technically about some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he can make shots interesting and camera movement. None of that's in here. It's a fucking garbage dump of handheld shots. It's just not interesting cinematically. Christopher Nolan, Dunkirk, we talked about it. Beautiful. Well done. Craft. It's all on screen. The money's up there.
Well, and that's not exactly a feel-good story.
Not at all.
I mean, it has kind of a sort of...
You know what? When you're making something that's hard to watch, when you give it a certain showmanship and a certain, you know, and that's why Schindler's List works, and that's why what was the movie about the Olympic bombing that Spielberg made?
Munich.
Great. You know, yeah. And that movie is absolutely no fun, but boy, there's a craft when you watch Spielberg's movies. There's a craft there that just makes it better. And you watch, you know, even like something like a minor Scorsese, like The Aviator, there's a craft there. That's wonderful and beautiful, and Chris Nolan has that. And I think J.J. Abrams, you know, Super 8.
I would
Super
say,
8 is not a movie that anyone talks about, but the fucking craft of that is great.
Well, sometimes J.J. Abrams is a little too tricky for his own good. But
the,
yeah, Super 8
the,
is very
the
well.
The craft is
it's
good.
Well, yeah.
Even, you know.
But you know what? People don't understand that.
James Cameron, craft. Ridley Scott, craft.
What you're asking for is cinema literacy.
Yeah.
Well, people aren't literate.
Edgar Wright's got that, I think.
People can't even read books.
Yeah.
Let alone. All right. Well,
So Detroit is... Do not see Detroit. It's a bummer. And you know, Corey, I would have liked for you to have seen it in a sense, but I also think, like, you're not going to have any different review than I'm going to have. And it's not two hours and 20 minutes that you're going to enjoy. So I don't even
I've seen this shit.
You absolutely have.
I mean, I've seen so much stuff at this point in my life. After 16 years of professionally reviewing movies, I still go to the movies all the time. I have film groups that I operate. I moderate. I see all this stuff. And I looked at Detroit and I said, I know this.
Yeah.
I know what I'm going to get. Does it make it any less important? No.
Yeah.
And a lot of people came out of it and said it was powerful and moving and affecting.
Nope.
But my friend Lee Thomas, who I used to review movies with on Fox 2, I talked to him and he said, yeah, it's like I don't want to see that again.
Yeah. People walked out of my screening.
It was hard for him to watch. It was pain. And in particular, if you're an African-American from this city, this is a painful movie to watch.
There were 40, 50 people at the screening I was at, and I would say four or five of them walked out. So about 10% of them.
Yeah, people left.
And it's too fucking long. 220 fucking too long. God damn it.
So I guess not that we don't need to have these stories told, but it's never going to be a thrill ride.
No, and I'm not asking for a thrill ride, but I'm asking for because it's an important story, and we all agree that it's an important story, does not make a great film. And some people can't separate that. People go, this has to be a great movie because it's about this important thing, and it's not the case.
But now you're talking about film criticism.
Yes.
There are, the easiest way, there are four or five Holocaust movies a year.
Yeah.
Minimum. Maybe a half dozen, maybe sometimes some years more. This year we're getting Dunkirk. Now The Darkest Hour is coming with Gary Oldman as Churchill.
Okay.
There was another Churchill movie that with Brian Cox that tanked that nobody liked.
There was a Dunkirk movie that came out last year.
Sure.
That was French or something.
It seems suddenly that this is a popular topics become talked about. Yeah. And maybe this will lead to another movie about Detroit.
Yeah.
That looks at it from a bigger perspective.
Yeah, Kathryn Bigelow, and I was skeptical of even seeing this, but I actually did read some good reviews before I went, and no, it's not good. All right, you saw a movie that you liked that I haven't seen, though, so let's talk about that. The Big Sick, Corey. Give us a review of that. Tell us what that's all about.
I have never been a big fan of Kumail Nanjiani as a comic.
I hardly know the guy.
All right.
What's he been in?
He's primarily known for being on Silicon Valley. Which is a great show.
Yeah, I've seen like one of those, but I liked it.
You should get back into Silicon Valley. Yeah. Mike Judge's Silicon Valley is a very funny show.
There's a lot of things I should do.
I know.
But Silicon Valley is good. No, I agree. I'm not putting it down. Yeah.
TJ Miller's on there. And
I'm putting myself down.
Well, it's a lot of comics are on Silicon Valley. I mean,
right.
TJ Miller and Thomas Middleditch. Anyway, I was never a big fan of Nanjiani's act. It's just very... kind of whiny and millennial and even, I don't know, whatever. And he used to do The Meltdown with Jonah Ray.
Okay.
Jonah Ray co-hosted that for a long time in LA, which is a show in a comic book store and used to be on Comedy Central.
Yep.
Anyway, I was never a big fan of his until he did. I liked him on Silicon Valley.
Okay.
And the movie is based on a real life story.
He's my Nick Kroll.
Okay.
Meaning I thought Nick Kroll was the biggest dickhead on 2 feet, and then I started watching The Kroll Show, and I was laughing.
You know what? I like Nick Kroll.
And Nick Kroll's very funny.
Yeah, I know.
Am I an asshole for not liking... I stand by everything I said. I like Nick Kroll.
And you know, Nick Kroll was great in a serious part in Loving.
Yeah, oh, he's great in Loving. He's the best thing in Loving.
Really good actor, yeah. Which Loving, by the way, is a great movie about... racism and prejudice, but it's not bludgeoning.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You really got a human story. Yeah. Now, is that a movie I'm going to run out and watch over and over again? Probably not, but a really good movie. Anyway, back to this one. So Kumail Nanjiani, this is a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make this up.
Yeah.
He's a comic in Chicago. And the comedy segments in this are pretty well done.
Yeah. Judd Apatow produced this,
yes.
I think. Okay.
Because we're always worried about...
Did Camille direct?
No.
This is some other guy. Yeah, you don't need... It's not important.
All right, but...
Because, you know, he made Trainwreck. I mean, Judd actually directed Trainwreck, and sometimes...
Yes.
Sometimes he'll take...
I think he produced and didn't direct.
Yeah.
Anyway. So he's a comic in Chicago, struggling, and he gets heckled one night...
Okay.
...by a cute blonde girl.
Mm.
And... they start to have a. He comes over after the show and says, "Hey, you shouldn't heckle me. That's rude to do a comic." Yeah. She's like, "Well, I wasn't heckling. I was wooing. I was like, being supportive." Sure. So they get into a big argument about that, and then they end up, you know, they have your typical kind of romantic comedy.
Rom-com.
I really like you, but we can't do this. Yeah. Let's not do this. And then suddenly she gets septic shock and goes into a coma.
Oh. That's what you get for heckling, bitch. I mean, go ahead. I haven't seen the movie.
So Zoe Kazan plays real-life wife, Emily Gordon.
Okay.
And then she's in the hospital in a coma. Meanwhile, his Pakistani family is strongly urging, they you know, they have arranged marriages.
Yeah.
So his mother is continually setting up dinners. Every time they have dinner, halfway through, like kind of on Svengoolie, when somebody rings the doorbell to tell bad jokes, a Pakistani woman shows up to try and date their son. And they do this, they all bring headshots, which is great.
Okay.
So he ends up with a box full of headshots of Pakistani girls. Yeah. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really entertaining, warm, nice, well-done movie. Maybe it needed a little trimming, a little editing.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard good things about The Big Sick.
It's got a 98 on the tomato
meter. Well, that's
meter.
Pretty goddamn good.
And the audience score is 91.
Oh, good.
So, and the comedy, Bo Burnham is one. Bo Burnham's his friend who's becoming successful.
Mm-hmm.
A.D. Bryant's in there. Then they've got the guy who's struggling, and David Alan Greer is like the room manager that MCs. And so
Judd gets the comedy stuff right. I mean, Crashing and Funny People and all that. He always does a good job.
Well, because comedy is not always done well in movies.
No, they did a good job.
That was that goddamn De Niro movie where he played a comedian.
I never saw that. That's not worth a look. Huh?
Doesn't feel right. Yeah. This feels right.
Good.
Michael Showalter directed it.
All right, I should see that.
From the State.
Yeah. Michael, he's directed some other
stuff. The Baxter
stuff that's not,
and all kinds of
stuff. Yeah, he's all right. Oh, good. Big Sick. Something to look
so
out
the
for.
So The Big Sick, is a little indie movie, but it's worth your time to watch.
Well, it ain't Detroit, so you're doing well there. Now, you put it up on Facebook as we wrap up here today.
I sure did.
What best were some movies? Because, I mean, for me, I'm going to give my list first, I guess. Dunkirk. Top of the list. Go see Dunkirk. You can't go wrong with that. And then I'd say of what I've seen, War for the Planet of the Apes, I think, was real good and worth your money. After that, I don't even know if I recommend anything after that, but shit.
I think you're forgetting one.
Well, Baby Driver, people like more than me. I'm thumbs kind of in the middle, but people certainly like Baby Driver. So I'd say yes. But, you know, Spider-Man, again, if you're super into Spider-Man, you might like it. But I can't recommend Spider-Man to a general audience. And Detroit, thumbs down because it's a bummer. And no craft. So that's my summer movie reveal. But you said best and worst movies on Facebook. I'm going to let you read them because they're
but
on
I
my
would,
phone.
But I would definitely go.
Well, you go. Yeah, you
I would definitely say Baby Driver.
Okay.
Would be my pick. Big Sick. The Shovel is. I picked The Shovel because The Shovel is my pick. That's an Abbott and Costello bit.
Oh.
Anyway,
what? I haven't seen this Shovel movie.
No, it's from the Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy.
Okay, yeah, it is.
They're digging a hole.
Right, they're digging a hole.
All right, The Big Sick is really good. I would put that up there.
Okay.
Boy, The Book of Henry is really a mess. But in terms of worst, I saw all the indie movies that nobody else saw.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah.
Dunkirk is very good. It's a little
yeah
cold.
Dunkirk. Yeah. My folks saw Dunkirk and enjoyed it.
It's a little cold to the touch. In terms of it got a little bit
works.
Of a remote perspective. But
I mean, I could see people not liking Dunkirk, but that's not because of if you thought it was going to be something else. But for what it is, it's great. I mean,
now I didn't see a lot of the bad stuff because I just at this point know not to go see.
Sure.
I'm not going to go see the fucking Emoji movie or the Transformers.
Did you see Guardians?
I saw Guardians.
Oh, okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good as the first Guardians.
Okay, so Guardians is... Yeah, that's the vibe I get on Guardians. It's kind of in the middle there. It's not...
Wonder Woman was very solid.
Okay, I skipped that.
I would put that right in the middle. It was good.
Okay.
It stood above a lot of the other summer movies.
Yeah.
Because it had likable characters and a plot, which is hard to come by these days. And on the bottom end of this list... There's a couple train wrecks. It's The Mummy.
Oh yeah, people hated that.
Wet farts. That is a bag full of wet farts.
But Universal is making more monster movies.
It really wasn't as horrible as it wasn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, I really hate those Transformers movies where I would leave the theater angry. The Mummy just kind of went, nah, you were trying to do something, and it didn't. It was just so aggressively like, guys, we're making a movie that's going to be more movies.
You know what the prototype, I think, for even stuff like that now is, and I think one came out this year, and Transformers kind of does it too, is Fast and Furious. We're just going to put one of these out every year, and you're just going to go because it's called this.
I think the first one was a hit, and it was kind of accidentally. They had to keep making them.
Yeah. But, I mean, people just make these, and they're, and I think that's what the Universal would like to do with their monster movies is, hey, here's these. And, you know, Marvel, too. By the way, there's a point in Detroit, and this is how I wasn't into Detroit. I meant to make this comment. That there's a point where I'm watching this, and it's Anthony Mackie's on screen talking to John Boyega, and I go, well, there's a stormtrooper talking to an Avenger. That's how much I wasn't into Detroit when Anthony Mackie.
All right, so we put the question.
Yeah, you put it out,
and we got a lot of responses. Chris Williams, who's a member of the Detroit Film Critics Society, a friend of mine, said, "Let's see, that's the Big Sick, best worst Baywatch."
Oh God, Baywatch!
Yeah,
I see Dwayne Johnson online doing damage control. Where he's like he retweets people who liked Baywatch, and he like quotes the international grosses. Because you know he was considered the biggest movie star in the world, and then this came out.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Let's see. Jason Rivas said the best he's seen was Detroit. Okay. Let's see. Our friend Shane Cobbetts, who's worked in film publicity for years and years, the two-way worst tie would be Rough Night and The House.
Oh, you saw you and her saw The House
together.
Yeah,
I actually did see The House.
Shane used to manage a movie theater.
Woo, The House was.
I think we talked about it already on this show.
That was a disaster.
It looked bad,
yeah, there was about three good jokes in the whole movie.
And that one they almost just kind of buried.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they knew it sucked. We didn't talk about Rotten Tomatoes ruining criticism. Should we get into that? Or do you have some more Facebook?
Let's see.
We should wrap this up. Anyway.
Alex Price, he said The Nice Guys. That was last year. I think I might have screwed up and said 2016, then corrected it. Okay. Wes Ward, our friend of comics, says War for the Planet of the Apes, best.
Okay.
Worst Baywatch as well.
Yeah.
Josh Glazer, who's a terrific writer, entertainment reporter. Dunkirk and 70 Miller IMAX was unfucking real.
Okay.
Berto Devalier, a local ne'er-do-well that we know, said Dunkirk best and Wonder Woman.
All right.
And then the worst was Valerian.
Yeah, we didn't even.
Ooh.
I gave you homework while I went to the gathering to go see Valerian in 3D.
And then we got a vote for Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
John
Chovy
said that was the most fun.
Not hearing a lot about that.
Most fun I had so far this summer if horror R-rated splatter is your idea of fun.
Okay.
So there you go, everybody.
Yeah, I was going to do this Rotten Tomatoes thing, but I think we'll just wrap it up. I think you can look into that. But, you know, they're hiding stuff from critics and for good reason, apparently. So,
well, the studios, but just in short, the studios have said, wow, Rotten Tomatoes is really taking a chunk out of our ass.
Yeah.
But these are the people who greenlight the Emoji Movie and Baywatch and Transformers, and they think that they can steal money by not producing a product that's worth a shit, but by merchandising things that people go, which was the big flaw with The Mummy.
Yeah.
They said people recognize The Mummy.
Yeah.
They'll recognize Dracula or whatever Universal horror.
Yeah.
We have a thing. There's no demand for it.
Yeah.
Let's make something out of it.
Well, it's also the Rotten Tomatoes thing when people go, people are, it's almost like after 50, 60, whatever, 70 years of this, it's working. You know, the system that we've set up of film criticism where you had all this critic-proof shit is no longer critic-proof. So in a way, the critics have won, in a sense. You know, it's one of those things where the goalposts are constantly moving. But for now, people aren't going to the bad stuff like they used to, and they're going to the good stuff. And that's a good thing.
The critics are winning. So,
but the studios hate this because the studios are like, but studios' defense.
Yeah.
And I've been on movie sets. You don't know. Yeah, I mean, as much as you go, well, God, you know that fucking Transformers was a piece of shit. There's times you're on a set and you're going, this is going to be great. I mean, 5-year engagement was like that. I'm on 5-year engagement with every fucking star in comedy Judd Apatow producing, and the guy who just made Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and I'm going, well, this thing's going to make a pile of money, and it didn't, because sometimes you don't know.
I'm sure they thought that with The House too. They thought, we've got all these people. This will work. And they improvised, and it just didn't come to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's times, but you don't know. Legitimately
no,
don't
no
know.
No one went into the Emoji movie.
No.
No one goes into the Nut Job 2 and thinks we're making a quality product.
No.
To then be mad at the critics about that, when you need the critics desperately, and a movie like, by the way, a movie like The Big Sick, which is a 98% on the Rotten Tomato meter, did much better at the box office than it would have done without reviews. So the reviews helped them. Wonder Woman was going to do money anyway, but I think the good reviews didn't hurt
it. Right, yeah, yeah. Because sometimes they say it's like the second week, because in the past it's kind of been like the second week is the critical review, or the second week is the word of mouth, right? Like the opening week is the buzz, the second week is the word of mouth, or something. You know what I mean? Wasn't that kind of been the trend? Because even like Spider-Man dropped off because of word of mouth is poor and stuff.
Well, things are dropping right off.
Yeah.
You can't. Hollywood is learning.
Dunkirk is doing well because of word of mouth.
But why has this been an ongoing? This has been an ongoing battle for 100 years of movie going.
Yeah.
Make something good and people watch it. But for a while, they felt that they could just throw marketing money at it and it would be a success. Mm-hmm. Well, we've thrown marketing money at Joel Radio and it's gone nowhere.
We've thrown exactly no money into Joel Radio.
Dozens of dollars have been spent.
I throw my money into paying for the host, and that's about what I put the money in.
Thanks, everybody, for answering our...
But no, I mean, yeah, look, you guys listen. And whoever did that, thank you for that. I see a bunch of people did that, and a lot of people liked it and didn't respond, but thanks anyway. And I don't know, summer movies look like they're winding down, and summer movie, I probably said that on this show, and this will probably be the last thing here, but, you know... The point of summer movies was the kids are out of school. So you're marketing these children's movies, these movies for teenagers, and then people just decided we're going to put anything in the summer, and it's kind of like maybe we should get back to the spirit of summer movies. Because you can release Guardians of the Galaxy whenever you want. I mean, but maybe that's a movie that should be for kids, okay? I take that back. But you know what I mean? You can release Baby Driver whenever the fuck you want. You can release fucking Dunkirk whenever you want. You can release The Big Sick whenever you want. Those are good movies. People will find them. People will go. You don't need to make it like this is the must-see fucking thing. Let's all run out. Summer movie, market. Have all these movies sitting on top of each other. And then have, you know, a ghetto of horror movies and shitty fucking... you know, Kevin Hart comedies in January and February.
Well, those are always going
to
come out.
Space this shit out.
Yeah, well,
you don't have to pile all the Oscar shit from Thanksgiving to the end of the year.
I've complained complained about that window.
It's fine.
But this is like when a Wendy's opens up next to a Taco Bell. You know, this always happens. They cannibalize each other. Believe me, the February death window was the bane of my life as a critic. Yeah. I would have to sit there and watch Dreck.
Yeah,
for 2 months in a row.
Well, anyway, let's apologize for this track, Drek, right now. Thank everybody for listening to Joel Radio. We never talked about my 2-foot marijuana paper.
I don't even know
cone.
How to describe this thing.
It's a 2-foot. I got this from The Gathering. Somebody brought this for one of the artists, and they left it. But it's basically, you know, you can buy these cones that you put your weed in, so you don't have to roll it. And they make them so they're joint size.
You can put your weed in.
And this is a 2-foot version of that.
It's the challenge cone.
The raw challenge cone. And it says, good luck. You're going to need it right on the thing. And if you open it up, you'll see that it is just a big thing of...
It's roughly the size of a baseball bat.
It's 2 feet long. Yeah. It's 24 inches.
That's what I'm saying. It's roughly the size of a baseball bat.
And it comes with like directions, and there's like a plunger to put the weed in. It's crazy.
This is the stupidest.
I don't know.
It's a
novelty.
Yeah,
gift.
It's a novelty. It's like a Cheech and Chong.
Yes, it is a movie prop novelty cone. It is a Pineapple Express esque challenge.
It's
novelty
ridiculous.
Marijuana cone. So I don't even know how I would smoke that. I don't know.
Was this a gift? Did someone just?
It was like a gift for one of the rappers who like. Didn't have the, I think because of the police crackdown, decided not to even attempt to put weed in it and smoke it. And so I decided to take it home. So anyway, I love that the fans listen to your, can you wait 30 seconds to zip up the laptop? Where the fuck do you got to go?
I got to go.
Get the fuck out of here. All right. We gotta go.
I gotta go smoke the challenge cone.
Well, that would be great.
It's
if
a
we
two
had,
foot long.
If we
bong.
Actually had weed to put in the challenge cone, I would say that's a good idea. But I don't. I mean, I could fill up an inch of that cone.
Where can they send the weed, Joe?
They can't send it to me, so I don't know. You know what? When I know a guy who's moving to Colorado and has given up, I will gift them. So if you're a comic who thinks the world's got you down.
Actually, we know
a lot of those
comics that have moved to Colorado.
Yeah. If the world's gotten you down and things ain't working out and you're not a comedy superstar and you're going to have a good time getting high in Colorado, I got a 2-foot raw challenge cone for you.
If you want a novelty joint.
I got your hookup.
That's ridiculous.
Put that in the car. Drive that through the Badlands of South
Dakota. We let that sit there.
It's been sitting there all
day.
The whole
show.
Where there once was a tray of Toffee Fae, there is now a 2-foot challenge cone for weed that has no weed.
Now, if you smoked all of this, how much Toffee Fae would you want to eat after this?
You'd be a juggalo, I think. That's the side effect. But anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time here on Joel Radio. Good night.